Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Welcome to this week's edition of Latin Waves. On the first part of the show, we speak to Yves Engler, author of Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. Yves contextualizes a Palestinian-Israeli conflict and explains Western government's unconditional support of Israel. On the second part of the show, we speak to Graham Russell from Rights Action. Graham refers to Haiti and how natural disasters are intensified when economic injustice exists, and what our role is as citizens of rich industrialized countries. So stay tuned.
They're building a wall between friends, a wall that justifies any means for their ends, a wall between Semites, rich and poor, brothers and sisters from not so long before, many feet thick and 20 feet high. No one can look through it and into the eye of a person you might know, to whom you might confide, now just a stranger on the other side. They're building a wall between water and land, so we can eat fruit and they can eat sand. A wall to make sure that our orchards will grow, and our kids can get fat and not need to know of the cities in ruins and the children in fear that your fathers and brothers in tanks might be near. A wall to keep quiet that which you fear most, so you don't have to listen to your grandfather's ghost. They're building a wall between future and past, a wall to keep distant the chambers of gas from the bulldozers' gunships and the tears of a child. Dignity, love, and honor defiled to people's reality from your facts on the ground. A wall to keep distance the terrible sound of the houses that crumble and the children that die. A wall to keep separate the truth from the lie. They're building a wall, and at such a cost, land, money, and safety, all the lives lost. A wall made of brick, but bricks can be broken when the people of Zion have finally awoken and said, no more walls, no more refugees, no more keeping people upon their knees. And then the history books will someday recall, before apartheid was ended, they were building a wall.
That was the incredible lyrics and music of David Rovics and his song Building a Wall. And I don't think I have to explain too much that that wall is the open-air prison that Palestinian people are forced to live in. And someone who has written extensively on this issue is Yves Engler. Yves Engler is my guest. He is being passionate about exposing the incredible injustice that is taking place in Palestine. And he's written about the schizophrenic relationship that we have, where we espouse our values of democracy and egalitarian values of virtue, and on the same hand, we continuously ignore our government actions and policies that directly impact the lives of millions of people. Yves Zingler is a Montreal activist and author. He has published several books. His most recent book is Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. Thank you so much for joining us, Yves.
Thanks for having me, Sylvia.
It seems always that the situation between Palestinians and Israelis is something that is too hard for us to understand, so we probably should just leave it alone. So give us a bit of contextual background. Where does this conflict arise, and why is it so hard for us to grapple what is happening in Palestine?
Well, I think the best way to understand the conflict is as late 1800s European colonial movement, i.e. Zionism, going to a quote-unquote backwards part of the world and taking the people's land. The best way to understand the Israel-Palestinian conflict is the fact that the past 100 years, the Zionist movement, and since 1948 Israel, has gradually been stealing more and more Palestinian land, and that movement has been supported by governments like the Canadian government and other governments to varying degrees over the past 100 years. And it's a real mistake for people just to turn away from it and say, oh, well, this just has to do with Jewish people and Palestinians and I have no stake in it attitude, when in fact Zionism has a long history of support in this country, and Canadian officials continue to support Israeli policy. So whether we like it or not, we're implicated, and that, I think, morally speaking, that necessitates a response from people who believe that all human beings should be treated equally.
John Elmer and many other scholars on this issue have spoken about what is Palestine today, the building of a wall that has essentially created an open-air prison in which people from Palestine are being denied access to water and fertile lands. But more than that, more atrocious perhaps are the way in which any supplies are prevented from entering this area. Early on Monday, May 31st, on international waters of the Mediterranean Sea, at least 10 people were killed and dozens more have been wounded by Israel soldiers as they raided a flotilla of ships carrying 10,000 of humanitarian supplies. Talk a little bit about how does this terrible acts of terrorism, in my opinion, from on the part of the government of Israel, go unnoticed? And in spite of denunciation, worldwide denunciation, we now know that France, Russia, Europe, and many countries in Latin America have denounced these actions. They go unnoticed and unpunished.
Basically, what happened is Israeli commandos attacked a ship in international waters, which obviously contravenes international law, and then killed at least 9 civilians, which is a war crime. The Israeli officials try to justify this by saying that people on the ships attacked the Israeli soldiers. But I think the best analogy is that if someone goes to rob a bank, and in the process there's a struggle, and then the person who went to rob the bank kills someone at the bank, it's considered murder. And that's the analogy with the Israeli commandos going onto a ship in international waters and then claiming they were attacked when they were the actual aggressor, and then they killed, which they claim in self-defense. So I think that's the analogy. That's the way to look at it. Now, basically, what's happened is the whole world has condemned this, and that goes from the Brazilian government to the British government, includes in different actions. The Nicaraguan government actually cut off diplomatic relations with Israel, and it sort of varies across the board how extreme the condemnation was. 2 countries did not condemn the action, and those countries are the U.S. and Canada. While the operation was taking place, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, was in Ottawa. About 10, 12 hours after the attack, the assault, the massacre, if you like, on the aid ships, Stephen Harper met with Netanyahu and actually extended his meeting, despite the initial reports that Netanyahu was supposed to quickly leave back to Israel. He actually extended the meeting. Harper referred to Netanyahu as a good friend. This is a good 12 hours after this Israeli attack, and the Harper government refused to call for the Canadians who were, there were three Canadians who were detained, again, illegally detained by Israel. The Harper government refused to call for them to be released, for 3 days, refused to even call for an investigation into the matter, and that's even an investigation led by Israel, let alone an actual independent investigation. So basically, you have, this is the continuation of the Harper government's policy of supporting Israel's onslaught against Gaza, and that includes Canada being in early 2009, joining the Gaza Counter-Arms Smuggling Initiative alongside the U.S. and a handful of European countries. And that's not, it's important to know, not designed to stop the real weapons getting into Gaza, the Israeli F-16s and the Israeli tanks and the different Israeli weapons that have left thousands of people dead in Gaza over the past years, but it's supposedly designed to stop Iranian or Syrian or weapons coming from elsewhere. Harper government in January of 2008 was the only country, United Nations Human Rights Council, that voted against. This is a 47-member body. 30 countries voted yes, 16 countries abstained. Canada's Harper was the only country to vote against this resolution calling for an end to the blockade. The blockade against Gaza is something that Amnesty International has called a collective punishment contrary to international law. So you really, the way that Israel has been able to continue its policy of really a terrible collective punishment against 1.5 million people in Gaza is because it continues to have support from obviously the most important power in the world, the U.S., and Canada. Really, North America is the last bastion of support for Israeli policy. Increasingly, even in Europe, which has historically been quite supportive of Israel, that is changing. And really, you have the last bastion of support, and you have the Harper government as the most extreme, taking the most extreme diplomatic positions in support of Israel, no matter what. No matter what Israel does, Harper's been there behind them to say, we support you no matter what you do.
Today is the 43rd anniversary of occupation of Palestine. And when you talk about the U.S. role in the conflict, and Noam Chomsky calls them an obstacle to peace in the region, that the real obstacle to achieving peace in that has been the U.S., unlimited support for Israel regardless of what atrocities they commit. And I'm reminded of President Obama being inaugurated in the backdrop of a bombing of the use of white phosphorus on the Palestinian population, you know, only a year ago. So what is the difference between the U.S. administration and their call for a solution? We are told that there's a solution in place, and people don't really understand the difference between a two-state and a one-state solution to the conflict. Who are the brokers of the peace?
Yeah, well, so basically, Israel could not, and this is just a basic fact, Israel could not get away with its continued theft of Palestinian land without the support of Washington and Ottawa to a lesser extent. And basically, if the U.S. demanded that Israel return to the 1967 borders, which is basically getting out of the West Bank and Gaza and letting that be a Palestinian state, and it's important to know that would be a Palestinian state on 22% of historic Palestine. So the other 78% of historic Palestine has already been taken by Israel, by the Zionist movement. So it would just be a Palestinian state on 22%. So that would be a massive compromise from the Palestinian perspective. But Israel refuses to accept even that compromise, and the U.S. continues to support Israel with billions of dollars of economic and military support, despite Israel's refusal to return to the 1967 borders. And American officials have, in these different peace negotiations throughout the 90s, basically went along with farce. Not even just went along. It's probably were very actively complicit in a farce of allowing the continued expansion of Israeli settlements on Palestinian land while the Palestinian officials were supposed to be in the process of this peace negotiation. And these settlements, of course, are the major obstacle to the peace negotiation. So the idea that there was good faith on behalf of Washington and Israel in these peace negotiations is simply absurd, because the continued expansion of settlements is the major obstacle to a proper two-state solution. Now, a two-state versus one-state solution is increasingly becoming an issue of debate, and basically a two-state solution is Palestinian state on 22% of historic Palestine in the West Bank and in Gaza. That is territory that Israel captured in the 1967 war, and so it would basically have Israel return to its 1967 borders. The one-state solution is getting increasing support in some sectors, and it basically says that what it should be is one state in Gaza, West Bank, and what is now Israel. It should be one state with equal rights for all people living in there. So there would no longer be a state that was based upon special rights for Jewish people, which is what Israel is currently based upon. The Arab minority within Israel are really second-class citizens. They don't have the right to own much of the country, about 93% of the country's land. The issues with immigration that prioritize Jews. It's really quite racist internal laws. And basically, the idea for the one-state solution is you would just turn all of what Israel now currently controls, which is Israel proper, the West Bank, and Gaza, which they currently control, that turn that all into one state with all people having equal rights within that state.
What prevents peace in the region? I mean, we hear that there is constantly talks of peace and dialogue. Who profits from this war?
Well, I think that what prevents peace in the region is in large part the fact that much of the world's oil is based in the region. And for some weird reason, the people of the region believe that that oil should benefit them. And people in Washington and Ottawa don't agree with the idea that the oil of the region should go to benefiting the people of the region. So they have been working for a minimum since the Second World War and going back probably a couple decades before that to figure out different ways of controlling the oil of that region, which is a very valuable resource, both in terms of the ability to profit from directly, i.e., you know, Western corporations extracting the oil and selling it, as well as different companies involved in the process of supply contracts. But also, I think it's a very important geostrategic value. So if you have control over or influence over the countries where much of the world's oil is based, you have influence over the whole world's economy. If you control the oil of the Middle East, which the U.S. largely does today, then you have a lot of control over China's economy, over Europe's economy, and I think that that's the main explanation of the certainly the Iraq war, the U.S. Belligerence towards Iran today, and then got a member of Canada is heavily involved in that belligerence, with the Harper government taking very extreme positions just recently, and actually on Sunday, they basically said it's okay for Israel to have nuclear weapons. We don't have a conference on nuclear disarmament in the Middle East until we deal with the Iran issue. So basically saying it's okay for Israel to have nuclear weapons, but it's not okay for Iran to have nuclear weapons. So basically, I think that's the main issue. And so long as Israel is seen as a strategic ally to Washington and the U.S. in terms of controlling the oil of the Middle East, Washington and Ottawa are not willing to put much pressure on Israel to withdraw from the post-1967 borders from the West Bank. And until there's a movement within Canada and the U.S. that demands that the Canadian government, U.S. government, withdraw its one-sided support for Israel, the Israeli establishment is very unlikely to significantly change its policy in terms of continuing to steal Palestinian land. And importantly, alongside that, is continue to be a outpost of Western imperialism in the heart of the Middle East. And to actually go a little bit further on that, to take the comparison, some people, maybe help people who understand a little bit about Latin America, is that the way I see it is that the regime in or the government in Colombia of Uribe is a regime that the U.S. that is, you know, working against Latin American integration, that is, you know, is really, you know, allows American bases in Colombia to undermine the integration movement in Latin America and the leftward shift. But at the end of the day, Uribe and the right-wing government in Colombia is just a regime. It's a government that the U.S. has, you know, a lot of influence with, but it's a regime, and, you know, the people of Colombia speak the same language, look more or less the same, eat more or less the same stuff as the people of Venezuela, as Ecuador. Now, the difference in the case of Israel, and the reason why Israel is such a valuable ally for the U.S., is that Israel, the whole society, doesn't look to its... So long as it's run based upon a European, or based upon a white Jewish supremacist basis, which is what Zionism is largely about, Israel looks more to North America or to Europe than it does to its regional neighbors. So the value Israel has as a real reliable outpost of U.S., Canadian, Western influence in the region is much greater than just a regime or government they may have in Colombia. And I think that that's the kind of way we have to conceive of what Israel is. It really is a European or North American outpost in the heart of the Arab world, which happens to produce much of the world's oil.
It's interesting you point out the way people have this, you know, ideas of wanting to have the resources of their lands benefit the needs of their people. And as you were talking, I was reminded of Eduardo Galeano, who says, you know, it's interesting that the five nations who are invested in producing armaments that destroy humanity are also the ones who are the brokers of peace, who have been, you know, enshrouded with this divinity right to decide who lives in peace and who has war. So have we reached a stage in our society where peace is only the right of those who can afford it?
I hope not. I think that is largely how the diplomatic world of the UN Security Council and stuff works. But I think that at the same time, there is the countervailing force, which is the populations, the people in the different countries in the world, the Canadians who don't have a self-interest in the Harper government's support for Israel's continued theft of Palestinian land. I think that if you look at what has happened, the opposition in this country to the war in Afghanistan, while, you know, we would like Canadian troops to have been pulled out of Afghanistan a long time ago, and we would like to have seen bigger demonstrations and more opposition, the reality is this has probably never been a time in the history of Canadian foreign policy where more Canadians were critical of a foreign policy mission than there are today against the war in Afghanistan, where the majority of the population thinks Canada should be getting out of there. I think the same thing goes with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. There's never been a time when more Canadians are critical and antagonistic to Israel's theft of Palestinian land. So I think it really, you know, that is how the world works. I think that is how it's structured, as Galeano says. But there is the other side to that, which is the possibility and not just the possibility, but the actual on the ground happening, where the population is able to exert itself and to say that it's in the interests of humanity collectively that we figure out ways of living together and with the environment in peace and mutually, and figure out our problems through other methods than war, which is obviously what the big armament makers and the military planners would prefer.
Why is this then, if you were talking to people who heard this for the first time, how would you convey to them that this is not a Palestinian issue but rather a global issue, and what can we do?
Well, I think that the issue is to say that we all have interest in seeing that conflict doesn't continue, violent conflict doesn't continue anywhere in the world. And I think in the case of the Palestinian-Israeli issue, it's because it is a hot-button issue and it has an effect on the whole geostrategic dynamic of the region, that is quite an important region of the world, that there's there's an interest that people have in terms of making sure that that subsides and that there's just resolution. But I think from a Canadian perspective, there's just a simple responsibility. It's extensive, and then the Canada and Israel building apartheid goes through it. The different relations between this country, the military ties, the intelligence ties, the role of different charities in this country that raise hundreds of millions of dollars for Israeli groups, and sometimes groups that expand the settlements. It's really the whole diplomatic ties. So it's from a Canadian perspective, there really is just simply a responsibility. If we believe that all human beings are equal, there's a responsibility that we have to demand that our government stand up for that principle of equality. So I think it's not simple. It's not going to be a struggle that's going to be won overnight. It's something that is, you know, been ongoing for a long time, and the movement is growing, and it's really beholden on all Canadians to get, to one hand, get informed about what's going on, and to two, to demand that government officials change course. And this is an issue, I got to say, that there are numerous groups working on this issue, groups representing all kinds of different perspectives, groups like Independent Jewish Voices, Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, which is more of a student-based organization, to Can Palnet in Vancouver, to Jews for Just Peace in Vancouver, so really Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid. There are numerous groups working on this issue from a whole bunch of different directions. There's all kinds of specific campaigns, things like boycotting the Chapters Indigo bookstore chain because the major shareholders use some of that money to support Israeli mercenaries, to bigger issues like sending emails and sending petitions to the Harper government. So there really are a lot of different ways in which people can get involved. And check out the websites of some of these different groups, and there's numerous different campaigns ongoing.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Yves Engler. How can people access your book?
The best way is to go to yvesengler.com, yvesengler.com, and they order it from a left-wing bookstore in Saskatoon, Turning the Tide.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks, Hilary.
Take care.
You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.